those of you who are children here today are probably way smarter than I was at your age. So here's what used to happen at my dinner table when I was in elementary school. I have 5 siblings, so there were 6 kids around the table, and my mom and my stepdad. So my mom did all of the cooking. She would put the food on our plates and then put the plates in front of us. And then we were supposed to eat the food. Now, I can remember looking at the plate and instantly knowing what things I wanted to eat and what things I didn't want to eat. So typically, if it was green, if it smelled funny, or if it was slimy in any way, I did not want to eat it. Now, you should also know that I was living in Michigan at that time. I grew up in Michigan. Vegetables were not a huge thing in my recollection. It's cold in Michigan, and vegetables don't grow easily, so I don't ever remember having salad. So all the green stuff was typically frozen and not the tastiest. So inevitably, I would stop eating at some point, put my fork down, and ask if I could be excused from the table. That was the way our family did it. And usually, the answer I was given was, you need to eat a little bit more on your plate, and then think of all of the starving children in Africa. Sometimes it was China. It was, you know, places that were far away with big populations. Think of all of the starving children in these other places. Now, here's where children of today come in. Probably, those of you children, if you heard something like that from your parents, you might say something like this to your parents. What? How does my eating more on my plate help any of the other starving children? I wasn't smart enough to ask that question. Now, chances could also be that your parents have a little more information these days and don't make comments like that. That's a possibility as well. But a lot of us grew up with parents who said something like that. Eat more because there are starving kids in the world. Well, fortunately, I'm a little older and actually have gotten a little smarter over the years. And so I know that what I eat and don't eat on my plate directly doesn't really have a huge impact on people who are starving. It's a way bigger issue than that. So today, what we want to look at is when enough food is produced in the world every year to feed every person in the world, why are there millions of people starving every year, and what can we do about it? So a few weeks ago, I talked in the children's time about a wonderful little book I read years ago by a man by the name of Henri Nouwen. And the title of the book is With Open Hands. And in it is this great little story that talks about the difference between living with clenched fists versus living with open hands. And I think one of the reasons that people are starving all over the world today is that too many people are living with clenched fists. So let's look for a minute at this story that Earl read in Luke. It's this great story of Jesus being with the disciples and feeding the 5,000. So they've been doing all kinds of things. They gather back together. They go with Jesus to a deserted place. And as is always the case when they go to a deserted place, all of the crowds follow them, making it not a deserted place anymore. So what we read is that there were 5,000 men. Now that does not include the count of women and children who also would have been there. So it was an enormous crowd. The day is starting to come to an end, and so the disciples, being the practical human beings that they were, said to Jesus, look, you need to tell them to go away and to go find towns and places where they can find lodging and get something to eat. They need to be able to feed themselves. Go tell them to go somewhere where they can find food. And Jesus looks at the disciples and says, "You feed them." So you can just picture the scene, right? All 12 of them sort of looking at each other like, has he really lost it now? Not having any idea how they're supposed to do this thing. So Jesus says, well, how much food do you have? So they, you know, must have kind of conferred with each other, and it turns out that they have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. So you can imagine their panic. Like, wow, we're supposed to feed all these people and we've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. So Jesus says, break them up into groups of 50, sit them down. Then Jesus took the food, blessed it, spread it out, and miraculously all of them ate and there were leftovers. Now, a lot of guessing has gone into how that might have happened. Especially for those who are a little skeptical of miracles. So some people, you can imagine, think to themselves, wow, those must have been massive fish, right? Like, you can picture those big hooks, you know, where you've seen pictures of fish that are just bigger than human beings. Well, I guarantee you that's not how it happened, because they were carrying these fish with them. So we can imagine that they weren't really large. Now, in the Bible study that I met with on Wednesday, here's what they thought might have happened. Somebody in the Bible study said, what if when the disciples brought their food forward and it was clear to all the crowds that they were going to share what little they had, what if that invited everybody else in the crowd to reach in, find what they had, and then to share it? What if that was the miracle of that day? Not that Jesus waved some magic wand, but that Jesus showed them what could happen when you share what you have. That might have been the miracle. I think they're onto something. I think Jesus invited them to open their hands. And so little by little, maybe what spread throughout that crowd was, oh, people reaching into their robes, oh, I have a loaf too that I can share. Oh, I have a fish. Oh, I have this. And in the end, if that's what happened, there were leftovers. And so it seems that part of Jesus' message is, if you will share what you have, there not only will be plenty, but there will be some left over. That's phenomenal. So let's get back to why it is then that people are starving. Why are people starving? We have some major issues with food. One major problem that we have is called agribusiness. I'm going to give you the short version of agribusiness. Huge corporations started manufacturing seeds in laboratories to be able to sell to farmers. When they made these seeds, they made them so that certain bugs were attracted to them. And so in order for farmers who have bought these seeds not to have the bugs eat their entire crops, they also then have to buy pesticides that these same companies have manufactured specifically for these seeds. The pesticides are toxic and they're very expensive. So the corporations are making money in a variety of ways. It's much worse for people, especially for the farm workers, but also for people eating the food, and particularly for the land, and then eventually the water, which is where a lot of it goes. So food prices go up a little bit, corporations get bigger and bigger and wealthier and wealthier. So agribusiness is one example of clenched fists. People who are more concerned about making more money than they are about people and feeding people. So they're in the food business, but feeding people is not their priority. Another big problem we have is related to animals. Again, huge corporations that have animal farms. In order to make the most money they can, they pack the animals into these farms. Conditions are terrible, animals are mistreated, and in the end, many of them are sick. And that ends up being the kind of meat that we end up eating. Now, do any of you know or have you heard of the show Portlandia? Anybody? A few of you? So my brother and his family recently moved from India to Portland, Oregon. Huge culture shock. So for Christmas, they sent us the first season of Portlandia. And one of the episodes in Portlandia has to do with this issue of animals and animal rights. So the show features a couple who have moved from LA to Portland because Portland has so many cool people and things. And they want to be cool. So this particular episode shows them walking into a restaurant. The server comes over, they're looking at the menu, and they're thinking about ordering the chicken for lunch. So the server goes away, she comes back, and she has a portfolio to hand them of the chicken that they might order. And in the portfolio is a picture of the chicken that they're about to eat, with all of the details about the chicken's life. So here's the couple at the table, they're studying the chicken's portfolio. And all the information that's printed is not good enough. They have questions, many questions, other questions that were not covered in the portfolio. So they begin to ask the server, and eventually, you know, the server kind of puts up her hands and says, I just don't have any more of that information. So they ask, how close is the farm where they were raised? So the server tells them. So they say, okay, save our table, just wait. We're just gonna drive out to the farm and check for ourselves. So they go out to the farm, and that's a whole other story, which is not worth telling you about. But they end up staying there and living on the farm for 3 years or something like that. So they don't end up eating the chicken. Now, it's obviously, they're poking fun at this whole issue of, we need to know something about the food we're eating. So they took it to the most extreme version that they could think of. And I have to tell you, I mean, it is funny. But it also raises the issue of, do we have any idea of what's going on with this food we eat? And so it's encouragement to be able to do some research. What are the huge companies that are abusing animals? And just by our not buying that kind of meat or that kind of fish, we make a huge impact. Because eventually, if companies are not selling enough, they may be encouraged to do something slightly differently. Again, corporations that are doing this to animals are examples of people living with their fists tightly clenched. Now, a third major problem is farm workers. So my parents live half the year in Naples, Florida. It's a beautiful community in Florida on the Gulf side. The ocean is just gorgeous. 15 minutes from them is a little community called Immokalee. I may not be saying it right, so if any of you are Floridians, Immokalee. Is that it? Okay, Immokalee, Florida. So small farming community. What's important about it is that most of the tomatoes that are eaten in the United States are grown in this little community in Florida. Now, I'm not particularly fond of raw tomatoes, but I'm very interested in the fact that in this community, there has been tremendous outcry because of how the farm workers are being abused. Again, the idea is that the companies that are responsible for growing are trying to make as much money as they can. So a lot of you probably heard of this little community years ago when there was this big outcry against Taco Bell. Taco Bell was one of the huge buyers of these tomatoes. And Taco Bell refused to pay more for the tomatoes. And because of that, there was a huge impact on the farm workers. So they began to do all this investigation, and what they discovered is that there were people, farm workers, being held like slaves. They found some of them chained. They found them living in these tiny little containers. Some of them weren't being paid. They weren't allowed to escape, or if they did, they were afraid for their lives. It was terrible, as well as just not getting paid a living wage of any kind. So a bunch of people with open hands got together, gave of their time, their energy, their feet, actually went in protest in a variety of ways, and people boycotted Taco Bell. After a year, Taco Bell woke up and smelled the coffee and decided they needed to do something differently. So they decided they would pay 1 penny more per pound for tomatoes. In doing that, the wages for the farm workers increased $5,000 per person per year, which was about double what they were getting. Just in that one little thing. So again, examples of what happens when fists are tightly clenched, what happens when hands are open. So again, it behooves us to know where our food is coming from and under what conditions the food is being grown, and how is the land being treated, how are animals being treated, how are human beings being treated in the process. Now, I want to suggest, because again, I've told you before, I hate looking at problems and not having solutions. I want to suggest two things that we can do. And when I say this, I want to acknowledge that many of you are way further down this path of taking steps toward food justice. So these are, in some ways, beginning steps. One thing we can do is, sometime in the next month, we're going to organize a conversation that's going to happen here at Montclair related to how we want to continue to be involved in feeding hungry people. Our primary program right now is what we call Children's Food Basket. We've been doing it for years, where we take food down to a couple of elementary schools on International Boulevard. And for a variety of reasons, things have been happening with the Children's Food Basket that are causing us to take another look. Is this the most effective way we can be involved in feeding? And how do we want to be involved in the future? How can we re-envision how we feed hungry people? So look for that, the announcement of that conversation in the contact, our newsletter. And please, if you are interested in this, join in the conversation, because it's a great opportunity for you to share your passion and what you think we ought to envision for the future. Second thing we can do, and this is where some of you are way far ahead. If each one of us in here would commit to being sure that one meal every week is from locally grown organic food, nothing else, so no packages, no nothing, all local and organic food once a week. If we were to do that once a week, all year, we would save more than 5,000 gallons of oil a year. does that sound like a lot to you? It sounds like a lot to me. That's once a week. Imagine if we were to do it two or three times a week. Just by eliminating the cost to the environment of trucking food all over the United States, we can save on the impact that's happening in our environment, as well as we know what's happening with the food that we're eating. So I encourage you to try that one meal a week, local and organic, and try to do it once a week for a year. And if you can, know that you are making a huge impact. Now again, the important thing is that we are on a path toward food justice. Again, we are in all different places. Some of you are so far down that road, and I feel like I'm way at this end of the road. I've never given food much thought. And it's time that I give it a lot more thought than I have. So the important part is that we get on that path and that we just keep taking a step and another step and another step, so that together we can look out for our planet, animals, people, all that contributes to health for all.